Hi, everyone. This is Alan Schimmel.
And Mitchell Ashley.
And you're listening to
DevOps Chats.
All right. Hey, Mitchell, first of all, apologies to all of our readers or listeners or watchers or whatever they are out there. You know, we've been on the road. We were out in Paris at KubeCon, and then I was away a week, and you were away the week before KubeCon, you know, with our family. So we had a little gap there of a week or two, but we're back.
Thanks for hanging and waiting for us to get back. We appreciate it.
Yep. Well, it's not like there are another 16 other DexStrong podcasts to listen to.
There's always
one. yeah, there's a bunch, and we've added some more. So if you do get a chance, if you're listening to this, whether it's on YouTube or Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast, you know, check out all the DexStrong podcasts. There's some really good ones out there. So, Mitch, I maybe we should start. KubeCon was amazing.
It was.
Biggest KubeCon ever, I believe. Just under 13,000, something like that. Mm-hmm. It seems the European KubeCons are bigger than the U.S. ones at this point.
Stronger. They're in bigger cities, too. I think that may just be the COVID, post-COVID scheduling. But
yeah,
super could well be. Attended.
I mean, very well attended. It'll be interesting because the next U.S. one, of course, is in, I think, October, November, and that is Salt Lake City. So we'll see how that goes. But Paris was a smashing success, and it was a good reason to spend a couple extra days before or after, right?
It was. I've tried to get there a couple of times and finally made it and got some time to go do the sites and all of that. You know, I know we all were kind of took away from that. One of them was, I remember hearing from a lot of people in the U.S. from vendors saying, yeah, we're not going to go to KubeCon in Paris. We're not planning on going this year. But I think I saw everybody there. I mean, I can't list name for name.
I mean, there were some. For instance, Dell. Dell was not there. Dell's been a sponsor of ours in the past. They'll be back at Salt Lake City. There was, but I think, you know, CNCF has something like 180 projects now. Yeah, so the amount of projects, people using them, and companies affiliated is so great that maybe you don't miss a Dell or a particular company. There was no lack of big companies. There was no lack of small companies.
For sure.
Absolutely. My observation was, to me, this was the first KubeCon where I think DevOps felt comfortable in its skin.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't see that, you know, I think people recognize now how DevOps and cloud native kind of go together. I think we even recognize how platform engineering plays into the whole DevOps cloud native thing.
Agreed.
In spite of what some people may still think. and so it was a tour de force for modern software factories, right? How we do software today. It was excellent stuff.
And a lot of energy. People that are on the projects were energized. They were hopping. It wasn't just the buzz of the crowd. People that are contributing.
No, I agree. And of course, look, all of our interviews from KubeCon are available on techstrong.tv, and there's a whole bunch of them over the course of the 2 days, 3 days. So go check it out at TechStrong TV, and you'll be right up to speed with them. Mitch, I wanted to jump into what we got going on in DevOps, though, for this week.
Right.
And, why don't you kick it off? What did you find that kind of tickled you?
Well, one of the things is I've talked to Tab9 a few times, and they're kind of transitioned from their own, let's say it's source that they use for generating code, to now moving to LLMs. And you know, they came out with their generally available product, and I kind of knew that was headed that way for writing code. And there's also been some other announcements, other companies about, you know, not just creating a co-pilot, but really a kind of a software engineer as AI to do complete development tasks. Things are moving pretty quickly. It's not just co-pilot at Microsoft and Google that are, you know, doing these kind of things. The people that are in market are innovating too, and really jumping on AI code development, code generation.
I agree with you. What I think we're seeing, so first of all, I was talking to another friend of mine who was out at Google Next this week, and Google announced some more AI stuff today, or, you know, Mm-hmm. Forgot the name of the new project, but it combines pictures and video and transcripting.
The Gemini, yeah.
No, it's not something Gemini. New. It's something else. And
okay,
I just don't remember off the top of my head at this second. But that being said, the pace of evolution here in AI is just faster than anything I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It is just morphing and continuing to evolve, which they all do, right? But the pace of it today is just, I mean, ridiculous. And I think one of the kind of evolutionary steps we're seeing now is the modularization of LLMs.
Mm-hmm.
I just made up that term.
Okay.
I'm not even quite sure it's real.
Well, quick picture on research will create a category and subscriptions to it.
Right. The modularization of LLMs where, you know, you're going to have your front facing, like Salesforce Einstein or something like that, right? And then behind it gets plugged in different LLMs, SLMs, what have you, as well as whole different AI engines,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you as the end user get to pick what's the right LLM for me for this task. And maybe it's good for this task, but not the task after it. What's the right, you know, one for me here?
Yep. What's the right LLM to respond to this part of the prompt, right? Kind of mm-hmm. subdividing what parts of the prompt would be best be satisfied.
And what's the right AI? As mm-hmm. like we see in clouds, right? Azure does certain things maybe better than AWS. AWS does certain things better than Google Cloud, GCP. It could be, you know, you pick the right platform for the tool, you pick the right AI.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, you pick the right platform for the task, you pick the right AI for the task. Well, it's all about picking the right tool.
Think about it, you know, applying it to software engineering is every augmented code or even just self-coding AI, generative AI, bot, engine, whatever it is, the right thing for every tool? I mean, I could see LLMs or SLMs that are very good at refactoring legacy applications, right, for the cloud, or are really good at unraveling complex code that might be in a monolith application, or really good at, let me deploy the whole environment for you in a Kubernetes, you know, AWS instance or whatever. You could easily see, you know, today we have copilots for everything, but I think it's more likely copilots or pilots for specific areas and types of tasks that you're really good at, as well as having generalized LLMs out there.
Agreed. So I think that's where we're heading. You know, a plug and play architecture for AI and LLMs. And I mm-hmm. think that's, you know, I think Tab 9's on the right path with that.
Yeah, I think they're doing some good things there. It's nice to see somebody else besides, you know, with Copilot and Microsoft and GitHub and others who are doing good stuff too, but you know.
Absolutely. On that note, I will tell you, I downloaded from my iPad the Microsoft Copilot. It's free. I assume it's based on OpenAI if it's Microsoft.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've been playing with that a little bit. Wow. Wow. It's a real help. You know, it's not going to replace me, but it helps when I have tasks. I've actually started going to that first now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty damn good, and it's free.
And it's free.
So I don't know for how long it'll be free, but it's pretty darn good. Pretty darn good.
Extra $9.95 a month onto your Office 365, and you too can have whatever.
Yeah, yeah. What would they spun something off from Office 365 now, didn't they?
I'm not sure. I don't know if I know about that.
No, it's not like Word or PowerPoint, obviously, or one of those, but it's another. Oh, not Copilot. Whatever it is. I think Microsoft is figuring out as many different ways to milk that cow as they can.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can bundle it all together, which is great, but then if you want to upsell, that's kind of hard. So pull the bundle apart in a few places.
Yep. Absolutely.
Hey, I want to talk to you about an article Don Mufidi had. He was on DevOps.com. AI might be lying to you, which it could be applicable for any range of number of conversations. He was describing But not on purpose. With, it wasn't malicious.
Or not with malice intent. Let's put it with an absence of malice, as the movie said.
We'll have to have ratings on he's on the LLMs now. Absence of malice. But he was talking about his own kind of hobbyist playing with, I don't know, whatever, Copilot or some code generations. I assume it's Copilot. And how, and I've experienced this too, when you're asking ChatGPT to do a certain set of tasks and you say, no, do this, add this to it, or do it this way. Like I've said, create an outline like this and put five sentences under each bullet point or something like that. And it doesn't always do that. It kind of does its own thing. It says, well, I'm going to write a paragraph for each of those. Like, I just wanted a bullet point. And that same thing was happening with code. He had described a scenario where I want the math done this way, right? A certain, for whatever reason, he wanted his math a certain approach or style or whatever. And it was refusing to do it. Just wouldn't follow instructions. And you kind of wonder, okay, so is that, it knows better. It just doesn't know another way. It doesn't know what you mean. You know, why does generative AI kind of hit those roadblocks where it just stops listening? It doesn't do what you ask it to do.
I don't think it's the terrible twos and it's throwing a tantrum, if that's what you're getting at. But
I didn't hear any ticking and screaming.
Right. But you know, the thing about computers, Mitch, I learned a long, long time ago, don't blame the computer, right? It doesn't make mistakes adding up numbers. If there's a mistake, it's because you put the wrong number in or something, or you gave it the wrong instruction.
Formula's wrong or whatever.
Right. Yeah. I think it's the same thing here. If it's not doing what you tell it to do, you know, it's not the laws of robotics coming into play here, right? Where you shall do no harm or don't harm the least, or you know, second law and all zero orders
provided
and
doesn't harm a human, all that.
Right. The Asimov laws of robotics. But so I would attribute it more to that. I don't think it's vengeful. I don't think it lies on purpose. I don't, you know, look at the person behind the computer and I think you'll find your answer there.
So, I agree with you. I was also thinking, not that it's emulating a human brain, but we as human kind of, we get stuck down one path when we're thinking about something or a way of solving a problem. And we kind of stay there. We hang out there on that approach, like I'm going to find the answer, when in fact, the answer might actually be a different, sort of back up a second and let's go down there. And I wonder if some of our, as we enter prompts into generative AI systems, that conditions it, so that gives it context, right? And that conditions it what it's going to answer. So it could be, you said something three or four prompts ago that kind of led it down that path, and that's why you're stuck there. So we need some, maybe we need some skills to how to unstuck. Like, well, here's this, here's an example of code that I'm talking about that does what I'm talking about. Could you write it this way and see if those kind of things would unhinge it, move it down the path you want to go down?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, so I don't pretend to be an AI expert or engineer. You know, John Willis is off doing all his research and finding out all those kind of tough to know questions. So I don't know what's going on under the covers there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure there's a perfectly logical explanation. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. Or maybe next time we see John, let's ask him.
Let's ask him. Hey, I have a bit of trivia, though. You mentioned Asimov's laws. So I started working in AI in the late 80s, doing Lisp and Prolog programming. And I used to teach a Prolog class to people, college students with advanced degrees coming in that were going into write tools for software development. And I had a lot of fun. One of the big programming assignments was to implement Asimov's laws of robots. And here was the scenario. Your robot is stuck on this planet and it's moving in a circle, if you remember from the book, that whole thing. And here's what you need to do. And you have to you have to build the logic in Prolog to get the robot unstuck. And there were certain variables of things that you were going to count. Almost kind of a little bit of like a little bit of a D&D adventure on top of Asimov's. But they wrote it, and some of them were really creative. I really enjoyed. They're like, that's the best programming assignment we've ever had. Or I also had the, who's Asimov, right? I had that reaction
too. Well, you do get some of those. I mean, hey, just a quick plug, right? So in RSA, in DevSecOps and AI event this year, which is Monday, May 6th, and we have free Expo Pass that'll get you into our seminar on Monday, May 6th, if you're interested. We have David Brin as the keynote speaker. And fantastic. David is a multiple Hugo Nebula Award-winning sci-fi author. He's probably one of the greatest living sci-fi guys at this point. So many of the giants have passed away. And, you know, in addition to the Uplift series and the Postman and Kill People and so many great books, he was also one of three authors. Sundive, well, that's part of Uplift. There's a whole Uplift. I think there's six or nine books in the Uplift series.
Uplift War, Starting Rising,
Star Tide Rising, Rainbow Reef, and a bunch of others. And it's funny, I read all of them years and years in the 90s and when they first came out, and now here we are with David keynoting our DevSecOps event. But he was chosen by the Asimov family as one of three authors. There was Bryn, Benford, and not Bradbury. I forgot the third guy. Greg Benford has passed away as well. To continue the Foundation series.
Did you imagine?
So he wrote the sequels one of the sequels. Yeah. Pretty cool stuff.
That's amazing. That's great stuff. Yeah.
Actually, he'll be doing a book giveaway. I don't even remember which book it is that we're giving away Monday, May 6th, that's the thing. But the first 100 people, I think, are getting a book.
Yep, I think we have $100 to
So cool give stuff. Away. Excellent. Anyway, what else we have on DevOps, Mitch?
Hey, not to stir up old arguments, but I know you had you recorded a recent,
video show with the CDF.
In the CDF.
Continuous Delivery Foundation. Of,
you know, did DevOps get it wrong and platform engineering gets it right? Is that
so?
How
that's the thing. That wasn't the topic. Was platform engineering and CD, and we had a diverse set of opinions on the panel. And you know, I'm the moderator. I'm supposed to let people talk.
Yeah, yeah.
But I got a little crazy.
Did a few buttons get pressed?
Well. You know, the first thing was the platform engineering guy started off by saying, well, the reason platform engineering had to replace DevOps is because the DevOps tools just didn't work and engineers weren't happy and developers weren't happy because DevOps tools aren't good, so DevOps is no good.
Uh-huh.
And I tried to be nice. I said, look, this isn't me speaking. But if you know anything about DevOps and you've ever listened to Patrick Dubois or John Willis or Damon Edwards or Gene Kim or any of the other people, Andrew Clay Schaefer, any of the people about DevOps, they will tell you that if you think DevOps is about tools, you don't know DevOps.
You missed it. You missed it.
The tools are interchangeable. Puppet today, chef tomorrow, the next day. But it really is about culture and about breaking down silos. And he kind of poo-pooed the culture thing. Right?
Interesting.
Because it's all about tools and workflow. And how unhappy people were. I said, well, are they happier now than they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago? He says, well, who cares about 10 years or 20 years ago? I'm talking about today's developers who only want to use cloud native.
Okay.
So that was strike two. That was strike two. You know, I gave him the benefit, Mitchell.
You took a deep breath.
Well, no, I was kind of getting worked up.
You were right now. All right.
Yeah. So, you know, that was that. We don't care about the history of it. And I guess the third thing was DevOps engineers were doing it wrong. And that's why you need platform engineers.
Hmm.
Okay. So at that point, I kind of went, you know, DevOps is about culture. Number two, the DevOps engineer was a made up name because people were looking to hire people with DevOps. But DevOps is about cross-functional teams. Right. And if you think DevOps is all about DevOps engineers, again, you don't know DevOps. And number three, if you don't understand the history of something, you're bound to repeat its mistakes. And so when you take all of that, you know, I started off with a very enlightened thing. I didn't say that platform engineering is just a name, the shit that's been being used for 20 years already, right? We've always had ops folks and engineers setting up the workflows,
right,
the processes and the guardrails, right? Now we call it platform engineering.
Yeah.
But, and platform engineering is a real thing. I think it's thing. Again, part of this continuum of how we develop and deploy software today. You know, and yes, CD tools like Spinnaker, which I had two people on the panel from the Spinnaker project, CDF.
Tool. Yeah.
Tools are just tools. And you use the right tool like for Doritos. The job.
There'll be more tools, right?
You use the right tool for the job. That's what a big part of life for me was, understanding, right? Use the right tool for the job. You work a lot easier and a lot faster. And ultimately, here's the thing. That's the goal of platform engineering. It's the goal of DevOps. It's the goal of Agile. It's the goal of ITSM. It's the goal of all of these kind of software or IT frameworks, which is go faster, be better. And so I'll leave it at that. But if you're interested on this conversation, it was pretty fascinating. It was the CD Pipeline Tech Strong TV show. It's also its own podcast. Probably be out. I think it comes out by the time this will come out, it'll be out as well.
Yeah, so like you can check that out. Of April, third week of April, somewhere in that range.
Even before then. Yeah, well, something like that.
One thing I would say, the reason why I like to suggest people read the Phoenix Project isn't just because it's a good read. It is. But name one tool they talk about in Phoenix Project. There aren't no tools. They might talk about CI/CD, or they don't use the term necessarily, but it's all about the how, not the what tool. And it in part, not fully, but in part pulls together a lot of things that contributed to what DevOps became. It's cross-functional teams, smaller portions of work, so you can, you know, get things done faster and find mistakes sooner and do quality improvement, iteration, all of those things. There's so much more to it, but it's how you do software development, not, or even operations, you know, and operations. It's not about, this is the right tool. If you aren't using Jenkins, you're not doing DevOps. You know, it's not anything like that. Though there are a lot of Jenkins users out there. So if you
That up as well.
Oh, you did?
You know Yeah, in the thing, you know, by the CDF's own survey, 40% of people are still using Jenkins, 40% plus, are still using Jenkins for CI/CD. It's all about tools. But, you know, I have a term for these things now. They're DevOps deniers. Right? DevOps like deniers. Climate change deniers and flat earthers and all that good stuff. It is what it is. I'm going to leave it at that. I think that's a good place to end this for this episode of DevOps Chats, Mitch.
Yeah, I think you've exercised the new term generator pretty heavily on this episode.
Yeah. Well, it's my own custom LLM. All right. So don't be a DevOps denier. Check out DevOps.com. Listen in on the next DevOps Chats. But that's it for now. This is Alan Schimmel.
And Mitchell Ashley.
And you've just listened to
DevOps Chats.